Gentlemen, I'm just going to close the door, if that's okay. Some of these doors, they really... Okay. So wait, let's just, before we, just to get ourselves together here, we're on Daf Lamed Aleph Omed Aleph. Okay, so you have that page. And if you remember, we discussed the fact that a person should not stand up for prayer until he prepares himself. And how does he prepare himself? So the Mishnah at the beginning of this parak says he prepares himself with a framework, a mental framework called Kovod Rosh. And the Braisa says that you prepare yourself with what's called Halacha Psuka, which means the study of some sort of halachic principle, which is very, very final, it's very clear, it's the end of a long discussion. It's not Iyun, but it's just something that we have to know. You know, it's interesting that the Gemara thinks that knowing something as profound as Rabbi Zeira's Benos Yisrael Echmir Al Asman, Leishev Ketipas Dam Re'iyas Tipas Dam Kachar, that is so simple that it wouldn't even disturb your tefillah. Or something like Marim Odom Al Tvuasa Lachnisa B'mod Shaloh Kedei Lachil Behemto Achilas Haroi, that is so simple that it's superficial. It would never even occupy my mind and in any way interfere with my kavan of tefillah. So there's one of two things is going on here. Either the Gemara thinks that these are simple halachas, or maybe what the Gemara is telling me is that what I think is complicated in the Gemara's context is very simple. I think these halachas are so profound and they engage the mind, but I guess I'm dumb. Because the Gemara is on a whole different level. Could you imagine if these two halachas that we studied so far, there's a third coming around the bend, those are considered superficial, they would not preoccupy my mind and interfere with my kavanah. Could you imagine what in-depth learning must have been like back in the day? We call Gemara be'iyun. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's unbelievable. Now, I wanted to mention to you before.
Yeah, I just asked you two words.
Yeah.
Ma'arim, what is that?
Ma'arim, we had a long discussion about that. Back in Bereishis, in the story of the Nachash HaKadmoni, it says, Vehu chayahu arum mikol chayas ha'aretz. The word arum means literally someone who knows how to circumvent, how to trick you, very sly, very diplomatic, if you will. Sometimes the word harama, as the noun of arum, is pejorative. Sometimes, though, it's a little bit more positive. Because sometimes the chazal, under certain situations, the poskim will actually advocate doing a harama. For example, in another week and a half or so, we're going to worry about selling our chametz. Now, that itself is a kind of harama. Why? Because you really should be getting rid of your chametz. The Torah says tashbisu, but you're going to sell it to a guy. That's a harama that's perfectly okay. Basically, listen carefully. Again, this is a much more profound discussion than we have time for now. But when do we cross the borderline from positive harama to the negative? Is as long as we're preventing the chiyuv, the obligation, from ever emerging, that's okay. That's acceptable. But if the obligation has already emerged, and now I'm doing a dreimet afinger, you know, in order to circumvent the implementation of that chiyuv. So in the case of Mayrim Adam al Tvuasu, it never came b'chal achiyuv. Because what do I need for the chiyuv? I need knisa lebeso after gemar malacha. There was no knisa lebeso after gemar malacha, and therefore it never came into a chiyuv. So then I can do whatever I want. That's okay. And the Gemara is going to even teach me how to do this, you know, step by step. But let's say, for example, a person would do a harama after the chiyuv is already chal. He's already obligated in something. Let's say, for example, he was already machayev himself in truma. He did all the steps that are necessary. And then he does a harama in which he tells the kohen, you know what, I'm going to give you this truma, but I want a kickback for it. And there were people, unfortunately, who did that back in the time of the Gemara. Well, the Gemara says he tries to sell Peros Shvius, but he does it on the sly, you know, in trying to find a way of tiptoeing. That's not a positive haroma. Okay, Rav Osai, the concept of haroma, you should know you could fill up an entire book of research just on the concept of haroma.
Can I add one thing on this?
Please. But the other question is, is it the Australian who is here or the Australian who's there? Who gets first dibs? So as I always told you in an auction, it depends who's on the spot. You know, if there's a tie between two people bidding for the same item, we give it to the one who's there at the auction live. So David, you're live.
No, okay,
age before beauty. Yeah, I think so in this case. I have to admit. Tom, can you speak a drop louder? We don't hear you.
That's all right. That's what you were asking. The Braisa was, I'm confused because the Braisa was saying that you can't do the dray of bringing in the grain, even though you're going to feed it to the cattle. You can't do that, but you're not obligated.
Who says he can't do it? Tom, if you get a hold of that rabbi who said you can't do it, send him to me. I have something prepared for that rabbi. He belongs to the Chumrah of the Week Club. The Gemara says, Mayrim Adam al Tfuaso. The Gemara doesn't even take a deep breath about it. L'chaim. Oh, it's coffee. I thought from here it looked, you know, when you're far away, like 26 hours by plane, it looks like whiskey.
I wish it was whiskey.
I wish it was whiskey. I like that line. Every time I drink a coffee for the rest of my life, Tom, I'm going to think of you and I'm going to see in front of my eyes, I wish it was whiskey. All right, let's move on, Rabosai. Yes, David, where were you? You were
a second. A second.
That's right, so you gave your rights away. No, I'm just kidding. We'll.
It reminds me, though, of an Ulpan class I had where a guy was saying, "What we were learning about the word aruma. And aruma is both naked and also like cunning, like cunning. A fox. This right. Cunning is aruma. It's right. Like also like very close to this word. It's kind of where it can go, it can be a positive or a negative, very right. On a fine edge.
They tell a story about a diplomat who was wanted to make a real impression, so she actually stripped naked publicly. So she took our room in both impressions. She was a diplomat and she was cunning, and on top of that, she was naked.
What are the word motz? What does the word motz mean?
Motz is in America, we call it a chaff. I don't know how you say it in South Africa. A chaff?
Chaff.
C-H-A-F-F? Yeah. Great. Okay, mate. How are my mates doing today? I had Shmuel Bornstein, you know, Ricky, for lunch last Shabbos. So he called me a mate. I said, is that only for a male? Or can you say that for a female? And I got very nervous, you know. Yeah. All right. So now I want to tell you... He's Australian, but he's from Sydney. That's like 4 hours away from you, I think. I don't know. I wish it was whiskey, I'm telling you. On a day like today, I really wish it was whiskey. Yes?
What did they actually do? What was this sneaky thing that they did? How did they...
What was a little bit sneaky was when a person could bring himself into a chiyuv, and he avoids the chiyuv, that's a little bit sneaky.
What did they do?
What they did was knisa labayis before gemar malacha. The sequence is critical. There's got to be gemar malacha, which we call by, we had a number of different names. It's called Digun, it's called Meruach, it's called Gmar Malacha. What else is it called? I left out something. Meruach, Zoreh, it's called Zriah. All those names are identical, they're synonymous. And that's supposed to happen before the Knesa Levias. He switched the order around, he took it into the house before he did Meruach. And Meruach is to remove the chaff. I mean, listen, Doc. One way, an easy way of remembering this, if you know, if I was talking, if you were about 5 years old, and I was writing like a Dr. Seuss book for you, you know, here's the way I would describe it. Imagine that the grains are people. You know that in Dr. Seuss, you know, everybody has a personality. You can see those little guys. You know, this one's a barley grain, this one's an oat grain. If the grains were a personality, the grains have a right to say, I want to see the inside of your house when you take me in. Remove the blinds. So what I mean to say is remove the chaff so that now the grains can see as they go in to the walls, into the entrance of the house. That's, I think, a nice way of remembering it if you're writing a children's book. You know, we have V'igadta L'Bincha coming around. And we got to start thinking of exciting ways of, you know, demonstrating and illustrating for the children, you know, what's going on here. You know, Bacchus and Paro. And Paro says, who is God that I should recognize him? We got to make it a little bit more dramatic. Okay. But Rabbi, okay, I'm a little bit, yeah. So now I want to tell you something interesting. The word in Chazal, the word for the Yetzirah is Michshol. If you want to write that down. And Michshol is Bigamatria 400. So they took a piece of glass that was worth 400 zuz and they smashed it. Because they knew that the Yetzirah, that's Michshol, was trying to get them into such a jovial mood that they would undermine the mitzvah of V'gilu Bir Ada. You remember V'gilu Bir Ada? So they broke the Yetzirah. And how did they do that? By taking a glass that was worth 400 zuz and smashing it. That's the Yetzirah down the tubes. And I'll tell you something interesting here. The Gemara says that the way to protect yourself against the din of Gehenom is through two methods, Torah and mitzvos. But there's a difference between the two. The mitzvos really give you a spiritual perfection while you're involved and occupied in the mitzvah. Not so Torah. Torah gives you a protection that continues way beyond the moments that you're actually engaged in Torah. And that's why the Gemara tells us that those who spent the morning or the evening engaged in Torah, it would carry them through the entire day. And even when they went to work, even when they bought an apartment, even when they got on a plane to Manchester or wherever they were going, they took that protective Torah with them. That's the amazing protection of Torah study. And I want to tell you something else. There's a gigantic controversy amongst the poskim about this Gemara of Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish followed in the footsteps of his Rebbe. He would never smile, a full smile, because he was waiting for the day of Az Yomru HaGoyim Higdil Hashem Lassusim Eila. So here we have a tremendous debate. Some say that that moment, which is going to allow us to smile a full smile, is going to come in this world at the time of Moshiach, at the time of the ultimate Geula. Others say no. Even after the Geula, we have to wait till what's called the Olam Haba. And then there are two stages in Olam Haba. The first stage is called Tchiyas HaMeisim. There too will be governed by the physical laws of the universe. And there we will be again a combination of Guf and Nefesh. However, there's another part to Olam Haba, which is called the Olam HaNeshamos. Pure spirit, pure neshama. No goof. That's called Gan Eden. And no doubt, at the time of Gan Eden, then Yimole Schok Pinu, everybody agrees at that point, we could have a full Simcha, and there's no question about it. It's not as long as you think, because time flies. Listen, David, you're a young man, so take advantage of every opportunity you have, and I know you're doing it.
So you don't have to smile, Rabbi.
Yeah, I know. You're a smiley guy.
It's all your jokes, Rabbi. We can't not smile.
Now we get to the third example of a halacha psuka, and this is Rav Huna about Behemas Kodshim. So let's see if we all are on the same page. And we're going to try to find this Gemara. Okay, you have it? Okay, it's a little bit below that. Here it is. Ki ibois ema. That's what does ibois ema mean? A different lishna, right? Whenever you see a lishna and then another lishna, the first lishna is called the lishna kama. The second is called the lishna basra. This one is the third lishna. It's the lishna basra de basra. And what does he say? Ki hadar Rav Huna, like the case of Rav Huna, who gave us a very important halachic dictum. Which again, David, as we say, time is going to fly and we'll have to implement this halacha very soon. Amar Avuna, Amar Abzeira, Zeira. Okay. Hamakif dam bebehemas kodshim. Hamakif dam bebehemas kodshim. Asur behana umol in bo. Now, normally, when you shecht an animal, and the animal is then brought on the Mizbeach as a karmon, the dam itself becomes mutar b'hanoah. We'll explain that later. But here, this is a case where he removed the blood of the animal before the shechita. And as a result, since shechita didn't come, okay, let me just give it to you in a nutshell. I'll try to explain what I mean, but shechita is a matir. Okay, use the word matir. Matir means to create a permission. So lacking this matir called shechita, the dam still remains in the original state of kodshim, of hegdesh. And hegdesh is asur b'ano, which means you're not allowed to have any benefit from it.
He got the blood without shechita?
He was able to do what's called hakaza. Now here you'll have to write this down. Hakaza is called bloodletting. Back in the day it was quite popular. Today it's a little bit out of style, but believe it or not, there are a few scientists that are actually advocating getting it back again under very controlled conditions to relieve blood pressure.
Right.
High blood pressure.
People who donate blood have much lower
levels. Right. So donating blood is really what we call hakazas dam. The Gemara says it's very dangerous. You know, you have to be very careful to rest after hakazas dam. The body is very weak. And in this case, they did the hakazas dam on this behemoth, on this animal. Now, let me read to you a Gemara in Yuma, which is quoted here in the footnote. You don't have it on your page, but he says, "Afal pi sheli achar shchitas hakarbon ein meila b'dam." As a general universal rule, once the carbon was shechted, that removes the iser meila. Again, meila is a phrase that you should be familiar with. I'm pretty sure you covered it already, did you not?
No, we haven't, but I know what it
is. Okay, so if you want to see something about meila, let me borrow your Gemara for just a minute. There's a very important principle of Me'ila in a perek called Ketzad Mevarchim. You didn't learn this, Rabbi Meir? I thought you did. It's the sixth perek. And if you take a look on it, make a note of it, because I'd like you to prepare this, on Daf Lamed Heyom and Aleph, okay, 35a, you're counting up five lines from the bottom. The Gemara says that you're not allowed to benefit from this world without a bracha. Do you see it? Tana Rabbanan, five lines up from the bottom. So just make a note of it now. We're not going to go into it now, but I would love you to see this Gemara for tomorrow. And if you take a look, two lines up from the bottom, well, I should say three lines up from the bottom, towards the end of that line, if you could underline the words Kadesh lo yavo lidei me'ila. You see the word me'ila?
Yeah.
So that's the same word that we're talking about now. Exactly. It's embellishing, it's embezzling from Hegdesh.
Oh, we have actually done that, yeah.
I thought you did it, because, you know, Rabbi Meir sometimes speaks in a robust voice, and I thought I heard this. You know, he woke me up out of my slumber. He's excellent at that. We don't need shofar blowing here. He's a great shofar blower. Best in the business.
You know, he is very good.
Best in the business. Yeah. Not kedai to miss his shofar blowing. In any event, there's a katzah called me'ila. Me'ila is the same as gzela, stealing, but with regard to hegdesh. People don't realize that hegdesh is the greatest enterprise, financial enterprise, that the halacha recognizes. When I take this table and I say, I raise their Hegdesh, if it's mine, obviously, then now it transfers over to Hegdesh. And Hegdesh is the owner. If somebody uses this or removes it from its place, he is in violation of what's called Me'ila, which is just another form of Gzela, of stealing. And therefore the Gemara says, if I didn't make a bracha on this water, and I drank it without making a bracha, chas v'shalom, that's called Me'ila. Because everything is Hegdesh. Lashem ha'aretz u'maloah. Lashem is always a Lashon Hegdesh. If I want to say that this is Hegdesh, I say Lashem. It's designated for Hegdesh. And that's why people have to be very careful on the night of the Seder, this is Zroa. And not to say that this Zroa is the Karban Pesach, because you say that, that's a Maisa Hegdesh, and then you're not allowed to have any benefit from it. Don't ask, the halachos are very complicated. So we could be Magdish something even today, but I would not recommend it. at the time of the Beis HaMikdash, the Gemara says in Masechet Yuma that as a result of Shechitas HaKarbon, Ein Me'ila V'dam. Ein, what does Ein mean?
No.
No, there's no Me'ila in the Dam. But in Hikiz Dam Lifnei Shechita, in our case, he drew the blood out of the animal before Shechita, then there is Me'ila. And if there's Me'ila, my friends, when you violate the Issur Me'ila, if you benefit from this dam, let's say you feed it to your animal, because in those days it was quite popular to feed dam to animals. I don't know if they do it today, doctor. They still do it? I don't know. But it was very popular back in the day.
So, it's good fertilizer.
Right, if you... Okay, fertilizer, excellent. If you did that, you would have to bring a carbon, which is called a carbon Me'ila. And that's because you violated the Issur Me'ila.
You did it accidentally.
If you did it accidentally, correct. Okay, so now umolimbo, it means that if you took the blood out of the behemoth and you enjoyed it, then you are in violation of me'ila. So we have now the sugya of halacha psuka. Now, Rabosai, when I mentioned to you a halacha psuka, what mitzvah does that belong to? I'm going to give you two choices. We'll make it a multiple choice question. Is it part of the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, or is it part of the mitzvah of tefillah, of prayer? If I tell you that if you draw blood from an animal that's kodesh, and now you use it to fertilize your field, you have to bring a karba me'ilah for that. What did I just do? Did I just fulfill the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, or did I just fulfill the mitzvah of tefillah? Correct. You're all right, but it's really an overlap of two mitzvahs. What do I mean? Normally we say that 613, each mitzvah is separate, is independent. There's only one exception to that rule. And out of the 613, I can pull out two mitzvahs from the bag, from the 613, and I can testify to you, without a shadow of a doubt, put my whole reputation behind this, those two mitzvahs form one entity. It's true they're separate, they're independent, each one is a mitzvah unto itself, requires its own bracha, but yet, I can combine the two, and by uniting the two, I create a new entity. And this is what I want to tell you. If I learn Torah, that's great. If I pray to Hashem tefillah, that's great. But if I combine the two, that's even greater. The combination, the linkage between Torah and tefillah creates an entirely new entity. In fact, it's fascinating. You know, the Rambam in his Sefer HaMitzvahs he enumerates the 613. And in each case, he tells you the source for the mitzvah. When he gets to number 5, he tells you there's a mitzvah to pray daily. He derives it from the pasuk Va'avadatem es Hashem Elokeichem, Ezi Avoda, what is considered Avoda, service zui tefillah. And then in the next line, he quotes the Sifra, which is the Medrash Halacha, and it says, Ezi Avoda zu Talmud. Study. In the same breath, the Rambam interprets the word Avoda in two different ways. On the one hand, he interprets it as Tefillah. Avoda is Tefillah, we discussed this last time. And on the other hand, he says that Avoda is Talmud. There's no contradiction. The concept of Avoda is the umbrella organization that has within it two distinct parts that form one entity. And the reason for this is because the greatest service to Hashem, the most profound way of experiencing and implementing Avoda, is by Torah study and by tefillah and by prayer. And perhaps when a person wakes up in the morning and he recites the Bracha Shalom Asani Isha, maybe this is what he should have in mind. A woman could have the mitzvah of tefillah, but she's not obligated in Torah study. So the only one-up that we have on them, on those mates, right, on the other side, is that we have the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. Does a woman fulfill the mitzvah of Talmud Torah if she so opts to do so? Absolutely yes. A robust yes. It's what we call a kiyum ha-mitzvah without a chiyum ha-mitzvah. What's a kiyum ha-mitzvah? A fulfillment of the mitzvah means you obtain the mitzvah. You get rewarded for the mitzvah. But it's not a chiyuv ha-mitzvah. And which is greater, a mitzvah that I do and I'm obligated, or a mitzvah that I do and I'm voluntary? How did you know that, Jeremy? Because it's counterintuitive. I would have said to you, if you woke me up in the middle of the night, that adarabba, let's give more credit to someone who's not compelled and he does it on a voluntary basis. No. Halacha is just the opposite. Pumfak, how we say in Yiddish. That a greater mitzvah is a mitzvah that you do when you're obligated. Now, there are mitzvahs that women have that we don't have. And in that sense, they could certainly recite the Bracha Shasani Kirtzono. But the greatest mitzvah of Avodah is Talmud Torah. And that's why when a person recites the Bracha on Talmud Torah in the morning, he should immediately afterwards begin his tefillah. When a person is ready to stand up in Shmon Esrei, what does he do right before he enters into prayer with Hashem? He studies Torah. Not the most complicated Torah, although these are pretty complicated, but enough of a Torah that it wouldn't distract him in his tefillah, but at the same time, it would allow him to integrate Talmud Torah with tefillah. Okay, that's what we learned until now. Today, Rabosai, and I know we're on a tight schedule, so I'll give you another 5-10 minutes just to start the next sugya, and then you'll learn on it.
The last one, so the fact is that you didn't have to. It wouldn't be Mila, but they took upon themselves it would be Mila.
That I don't know. I never heard such a thing. It's new to me.
But what was the... we said that these three things, in each case, they were Mahmir.
No, not at all. That's what our friend here said, that you have to be machmir, you can't take your grains in without first doing bar melacha. I deny that. You're allowed to take your grains into the house, mayrim adam. The word mayrim means do it. It doesn't mean that you have to hesitate. Do it. Mayrim
adam. The lady is a machmir, though.
Who? The yeah, that's a chumra, but that's one out of three. You know, I don't want you to think.
Not three examples.
No. Not at all.
Examples.
These are three examples of what we call a halacha psuka, which is a final halachic ruling. But it's not a chumra. You're right, Doc. In one out of three cases, it is a chumra, but that's coincidental to our sugya. You know, it's not relevant to our sugya. The underlying principle of our sugya, the power of our sugya, is don't begin the mitzvah of tefillah without first getting involved in what mitzvah? Talmud Torah. However, be careful, says the Gemara, when you're integrating Torah and tefillah, make sure it's a Torah that won't distract you and undermine your ability to be fully focused on your tefillah. That's called halacha psuka.
It seems so interesting. We normally study, a lot of places they'll study some halacha after davening. They should really be doing it before davening.
I would say both are correct. Tefillah should be sandwiched in between two sessions or two experiences of Talmud Torah. The first Talmud Torah is going to link up Torah with tefillah. The second Torah is going to link up the Torah with the previous tefillah that you davened before. And in fact, it's very fascinating. This halacha of integrating Torah and tefillah takes on new and more profound dimensions when we get to the tzibur. When do we study tzibur? When do we study Torah in the tzibur? I'll give you a hint. Mondays, Thursdays, Saturdays. What am I talking about? Kriyas HaTorah B'tzibur. But in Kriyas HaTorah B'tzibur, we not only have a bracha before the Torah that we study, we even have a bracha after we study Torah. So basically the bracha is a kiyum of tefillah, and we have to sandwich our Torah study with tefillah before and tefillah afterwards. It's absolutely amazing, and they're just very, very profound examples of this. In any event, what is the difference now between our Mishnah and the Braisa that we learned, Tana Rabbanan? The Mishnah says that what's the preparation for tefillah?
COVID
rush. And the Braisa says what's the preparation for tefillah?
Talmud
Torah. There's no contradiction, Rabbi. So they're both correct. There's no reason in the world that Talmud Torah has to undermine a mindset called COVID rush. And what it means is the following. The Gemara understands that Vigilu Bira'ada is not a contradiction. You can have a perfect synthesis between Gila, which is Torah, and Ra'ada, which is COVID rush. And both can coexist simultaneously.
you're quite familiar with Talmud Torah.
Correct.
That's like a simcha as well.
Right, gila meaning simcha. Right, and how do I know this? Because the pasuk says, Pikudei Hashem Yisharim V'samchei Lev. Fascinating.
But you also need Kavod Rosh, don't you, with Talmud Torah? You need it.
Correct.
You know, they're interlinked.
There are so many halachas in Torah study which require a serious mood.
Yeah.
And one is not allowed, just like one is not allowed to daven in certain places, you know, if there's soa around, or if there's urine around, this, that, and the other thing. If there's an erev around, you know, so a woman is exposed. So too, you're not allowed to study Torah. There's such a mirror image between the laws of Torah and the laws of tefillah. The only exception that I know of, where they part ways, is Rachmana Litzan and Avelus, during grief and mourning. There, Torah is completely removed,
yeah,
and tefillah still exists. But you should know, even with regard to tefillah, it's very complicated. The tefillah of an avel is a complicated business. And that's why, until the burial, there is no tefillah. There's no room for tefillah. After the burial, we already sort of lighten it a little bit, and we allow for tefillah. But Torah is unacceptable. Basically, God gave us a mouth. And the mouth is one of the greatest gifts that He gave us. And what do we do with the mouth? Two things. Torah and tefillah. That's what we're meant to do with the mouth. V'dibarta bam. V'dibarta bam is what we should do with the power of speech. And not only is it Torah, but v'dibarta bam is also tefillah. And even though Chana, who was the paradigm for tefillah, she was moving her lips without speaking out loud, but the poskim write that the greatest level of tefillah is when you speak it out. Somehow when you say and enunciate the words, it makes an even greater, a greater impact. Rabbanan avdu kemas nisan. The Rabbanan put the emphasis on our Mishnah, namely the recommendation of Kovid Rush. Rav Ashi Ovid means he did, he followed. Kibraisa, he put the emphasis on Halacha Psuka, on Talmud Torah. But all the poskim say that there's no contradiction between the two. It's only a question of where you want to put the emphasis. Tana Rabbana, we learned in a Braisa, Ein Omdim Lehispalel, one is not permitted to begin his tefillah, Lo Mitoch Atzvus, not in a state of absolute despair. Velo Mitoch Atzlus, literally the word Atzlus means laziness. But you're going to have to research this, because what is the connection between laziness and prayer? Why would a person be in that state of being? Velo mitoch schok, he should not be in a state of schok. Schok means laughter. That's not appropriate. You don't go into the king laughing. Velo mitoch sicha, and not just, you know, schmoozing, you know, words of meaninglessness, you know, words of what we call, who knows what the word leitzanut means. Is that familiar to anybody? Leitzanut means cynicism. You know, sometimes people are very cynical. That's not appropriate for tefillah.
Clowning around.
A leitzan is a clown. V'lo mitoch kalus rosh. And he should not be lightheaded, so to speak, as if nothing in life counts, nothing is worth anything. V'lo mitoch dvarim b'teilim, and not wasting his time with frivolities. Ela mitoch simcha shel mitzvah, he should be involved in simcha shel mitzvah. Now, what does simcha shel mitzvah mean? So here we have a Rashi, ela mitoch simcha. It's about two-thirds down your page. Do you see it? Ela mitoch simcha. Here we go.
If you're saying that, then what you're saying is that a normal ruler shouldn't daven, because he can't be sick. That's why he can't learn, because he can't be sympathetic or smayah.
Right, the best recommendation that this Braisa gives you to prepare you for tefillah is to get into a simcha shel mitzvah mode. Now, how do you do that? So if you take a look at Rashi gives us three different examples as to how we get into this mode of simcha shel mitzvah. The first one is tanchumim shel Torah. What is tanchumim shel Torah? You know, we live in a generation where people are despair, they're in despair, you know, they see what goes on, you know, we have enemies and they surround us. But We have to remind ourselves of Geulas Mitzrayim, that God took us out of Egypt. That's called Smichus Geula L'Tefillah. And Rashi says that the reason why we want to attach Gal Yisrael, the last bracha of Kriyat Shema, to Tefillah, is in order to uplift our spirits and create a Simcha Shel Mitzvah through the Tanchumen. Tanchumen means the words of solace. Of what?
Consolation.
Of consolation of Geulas Mitzrayim. If God took us out of Mitzrayim, then surely He has the power to save us today and redeem us today. Number two, says Rashi, because again, that's going to be helpful for Shacharis, it's not going to help me for Mincha. Rashi says, Samuch l'tehilo l'david. And Rashi says once again that Tehilo l'david, which we call Ashrei, also has an element of Tanchumen in it. Ritzon Yirei of Yasa, God will hearken to the will of his, those who fear Him. Shomer Hashem is Kolo Avav, God protects those who love Him. And this is called Shevach. Now it's interesting, Rashi combines two concepts here, Shevach, which is praise, and Tanchumen, which is consolation. And Rashi holds that they're all one entity, because they all bring us to a state of Simcha Shel Mitzvah. So again, Rabbi Osei, if a person is in a state of despair, he's gloomy, he thinks that everything looks black and dark and there's no chance for redemption, there's no chance for praising Hashem out of Simcha Shel Mitzvah, that's not appropriate for tefillah. Ukigon, and now Rashi says, Mikros Hasduros B'tefillas Arvis. Now this is for those who remember what it was like in Chutz Laretz. I've already forgotten it. In fact, even when I go to Chutz Laretz, which I do frequently, I don't even recite it. I just can't get back into the shmug of it. But in Chutz Laretz, right after Shomer Sama Yisrael La'ad, there's a whole slew of psukim, of verses that we say. And the original reason for that takana was to make sure that those who come late to davening, you know, will still be able to catch up. And Rashi says that Kilo Yitosh Hashem es Amo, that's the essential pasuk that we read over there, and that's going to put us into a mood from Tanchumen and Shevach HaKadosh Baruch Hu to be ready for Simcha, to be in a state of Simcha Shel Mitzvah, to be ready for Tefillah. Now, does this have anything to do with a dialogue, not between man and God, but between man and man? And the Braisa continues. V'chein, so too, we get together, two friends, we spend time together, and now we have to part. We have to part ways. Parting is always a little bit of a
sweet sorrow,
right? It's a little bit sorrowful to say goodbye, especially my Rebbe said, he remembers when he said goodbye to his father, they knew that they wouldn't see each other for who knows how many decades. So it's a little bit sad. Lo yipater adam mechaver. Yipater means he shouldn't depart from his friend. Lo mitoch sicha. You know, that's not, you know, you don't want him to remember you as the jokester, as the clown. Lo mitoch schok. Lo mitoch kals rosh. Lo mitoch dvar betelim. Ela mitoch dvar halacha. Could you imagine? You're saying goodbye to your friend, and the last thing you say, the parting words, is a dvar halacha. You tell him about Bnos Yisrael Echmir Alatzvot. Or you tell him about a Behemoth's Kodshim Sheikizu as Dama Michayim. And whether it's meal or not. Tell him about Myram Adam Al Tuasa Vichlis Lemotshala. And why? Simu Divrayim. I'm sorry, I think I skipped something. Shekein Matsinu B'Neviim Harishonim. And this we find in the early Neviim, the prophets. Shesimu es divrayim bedivrei shevach v'tanchumen, and Rashi identifies shevach v'tanchumen as Torah. And when a person says goodbye to a friend, he should sort of leave him with a consoling message, you know, an upbeat message, thanking Hashem for all the opportunities that they had, and give him a dvar halacha psuka, give him some sort of final psak in halacha. So on both sides, what we want to do now is stop here. I'm going to ask you to try to make a little bit of progress in the Gemara, but first to review and do a revision on what we already learned. Try to figure out what the Gemara means, and especially to review this Rashi that we saw inside, Ela Mitoch Simcha. We had learned about Schok and Mili Schok Piv. I just want to mention that the language She'imole, of milui, that applies to something that has a physical existence, what we call a mitzius gashmis. Schok is something that doesn't lend itself to milui because there's no such thing as milui with regard to the physical world. For that you need the infinite world of eternity. Ketzad efshal adas ma'u shir shal milui. We want to ask the question, how do you know what is considered milui and you've overstepped your bounds? Milui means simcha b'shlemus. When a person thinks and he convinces himself mistakenly that he's reached a state of perfection, and he doesn't think at that moment that his milui really belongs to a finite world, he convinces himself that he has reached perfection, that's something that's prohibited. So again, the Torah is not opposed to joy, to telling jokes, and to schok, but when a person mistakenly confuses schok with shlemus, the schok of this world, with perfection, that's something that cannot be accepted. We spoke about the pasuk, Oz Yomru Hagoyim Higdil Hashem Lasosim Eila. And the question is, what does it mean, Oz Yomru Hagoyim? Is that a reference to the Zman HaGeula? And the question that the Marashah asks is as follows. Madua holchicha ha-gemara sherak bizman ha-geula li-osid yeh mutol lischok me-akosiv az-yom ha-goyim ha-ri efshal ha-chiyatzos b'pashtus me-akosiv ha-kodem b'shuv Hashem eshiv az-tzion. The Pasuk says B'shuv Hashem Eshiv Atzion. That certainly is a reference to the ultimate Geula. Why does Gemara insist on quoting the Pasuk Higdil Hashem Lasos Im Eile? And the answer that's offered here in the name of the Birchas David is Mitchilas HaKosu B'shuv Hashem Eshiv Atzion. That's not a proof. Ein Lohochiyat Shekodim Lachach Osu L'malos. It doesn't say explicitly that up until Shuv Hashem Eshiv Atzion we're not allowed to have Malos Chok Pinu. Yesh Lomash HaKosuv Hu HaMetzius HaKayemes. It means that the Pasuk is simply describing reality as it exists. We don't have a milui schok in Golos, but lasid lavo will be mamale schok pinu. The Gemara quotes the next part of the Pasuk. It says, Oz yomra goyim. How do the goyim know about the geula? And the answer is, because they see that klal yisrael asochakim, af shekodim ekpidu shalol ischok, they see a transition in the behavior pattern of the Jewish people until now. They were in a situation, a frame of mind of gloom and despair, and now, Baruch Hashem, they're in a state of schok and simcha. They will be clever enough to deduce that this transition is a result of geula. And not only that, the pasuk b'shuv Hashem eshivat Zion doesn't prove that there's an isur that the Torah enjoins you from being memale schok piv, because we can interpret that the pasuk is a result of the reality. But when the pasuk says then higdil Hashem lasu simono yinu smechim, then if you take a look in the Metzudas David, he says Yomru Yisrael shebavur bitachon haYeshua zos higdil Hashem lasu simonu hayinu smechim biyodenu bagolus, that even while we were in the golus, we were in a state of bitachon, we were really relying on Hashem. Mito'u mikach shalokosav hayinu memalim pinu schok. It doesn't say that as a result of that bitachon we would fill our mouths with laughter. Is meduyak, we can derive from that sheba odum bagolus, while they're in golus, then they would not be allowed to be memalim schok pinu. But hayinu smechim, even though we had an element of simcha because of the bitachon, but nevertheless, even though we were smechim, we were not allowed to be mamala schok pinu. Why did the Gemara have to tell us that Reish Lakish fulfilled the dictum of his Rebbe, Rabbi Yochanan? What's the chidush here? After all, why would we think otherwise? Isn't it pashut? The answer is that Reish Lakish, by his very nature, was someone who was always jovial, and it was very challenging for him. And we should learn a Kal Vachomer, if someone like Reish Lakish, with his outgoing and friendly and happy personality, was able, nevertheless, to fulfill this dictum of Asur Lamalei Schok Pinabal Mazer, how much more so we have to fulfill that dictum of Rabbi Yochanan. And not only that, you might have thought that Rabbi Yochanan was saying this halach in the name of Rashbi, and maybe Rashbi said that to himself or to those who are very unique on the level of Rashbi. The Gemara wants to tell us that this was formulated by Rabbi Yochanan in the name of Rashbi as a horah, and therefore Reish Lakish's Talmud implemented that horah. We spoke today about halacha psuka. Rashi says, "Dibra maska halacha sheyamod lispalel mitoch halacha she'eno tzricha iyun, a halacha that doesn't require in-depth analysis. Kadesh lo yahar ba b'tfiloso." Rabbeinu Yonah and the Ritva, they say that halacha psuka is halacha that has no machlokes, and therefore he's not going to think during his davening, how do we paskin? Rabbeinu Yonah further says that Sarach Shalote Halacha Chamura, even if there's no machlokas, it shouldn't be a difficult, complicated, complex halacha, because that again will distract us during tefillah. And the question is, this is the famous kash of the Trumas Hadeshin, if we are worried about a mispalel mitoch halacha sheina psuka, that he'll come to be maharba. Is the Gemara should have added another principle here? Lo yikanes lemerchatz al beis hamkisei, or makomos mitunaf mitoch halacha shein psuka. You know, it's the same way we always say there's a parallel between Ilchus Tefillah and Ilchus Torah, Talmud Torah here too. Before he studies Torah, he has to make sure. I should say, when he studies Torah, and he's then going to go into a bathhouse or so, he should be careful to study halacha psuka, because otherwise his mind might be preoccupied with the analysis of the deep halachas that he's studying, and continue with that analysis mentally while he's in a makom mitunaf. The answer is that with regard to tefillah, there's more of a kpeda. Why? Shelo yitztarech afil litroach ulesalek belibo es machshavos haTorah. That a person shouldn't even have to exercise a minimum amount of effort during his tefillah in order to remove those logical preoccupations with Torah. Because even the most limited and superficial tircha of involvement, you know, to work to try to remove these thoughts of Torah and focus on his tefillah, that itself, that minimum amount, is going to be sufficient to distract him, unfortunately, from the kavanah in tefillah. And therefore, lo yamon mitoch halacha sheino psuka. But if he's going into makomos mitunafim, then he's free at that point to work very hard to remove any thoughts of Torah from his head. What is the case of halacha psuka? The Gemara gives three examples. The Pnei Shlomo says, Abaye's example is a halacha psuka, means there's no one who disagrees with him. And at the same time, it's something that doesn't require a great deal of iyun. The Gemara gives this example of Rabbi Zera, Benos Yisrael Echmiral Aksman, and that's Abaye. Rava says the halacha psuka is even a halacha that has a machlokas, but once there's a psak halacha, final verdict, without any dissension, then it's already considered a halacha psuka. Psuka means we've already paskened up the halacha like me, and that's the din of Rav Yoshia. And if you take a look in Bava Metzia, on Da Peches, Rav Yane actually argues with Rav Yoshia, but we paskin like Rav Yoshia, Mayriv Adam Al Tvuasa. The Ibai same at the last Lishna is Rava holds that halacha shenifsika lechumra. When do we apply the principle and classify halacha as psuka? That's only if we have a chumra, like the din of Rav Huna with regard to behemas kodshim and akozas dam. That is called a chumra. On the other hand, the Birchas Harosh says that there's a remez here that ein omdim lehispalel Ela mitoch halacha psuka, shall yidei mailas limud haTorah b'simcha shel mitzvah. When he achieves this level through Torah study of simcha shel mitzvah, naseis shas ratzon, HaKadosh Baruch Hu mekabel es tfiloso. With this simcha, he projects himself closer and closer to the Shechina. He's ready for tefillah. He's almost in a state of tefillah already. Ve'alzeh, on that, Abai comes to tell us that this maila that you can achieve through limud Torah of simcha shel mitzvah applies not only when you're studying gufei Torah, but even if you're learning the chumras that Bnos Yisrael echmiru al atzman, that itself is considered osek batorah, and it's sufficient to engender a state of simcha shel mitzvah. Rava adds that even a chiddush in din, which is a din that's through harama, you know, he's looking for a way not to be chayiv in maaser, but since it's a true din, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is happy with that limud as well, and it has the maila of Eisek HaTorah and Simcha Shel Mitzvah. Rava now adds in the Lishna Basra, the din of Rav Huna, B'mekiz Dam Kodshim, B'mekiz Kodshim, that even though this din is not relevant today, it's not practical in our time after Churban, nevertheless, learning such a din is no less of an Eisek HaTorah that engenders Simcha Shel Mitzvah. Now, Rabosai, on the question of the Chumr itself, of Tipas Dam Kechardo, we would need an entire Shia to really analyze that and appreciate that, dissect it be'iyun. We're not going to be able to do that today. I do want to mention, though, with regard to Mayrim Odom Al Tvuasa Machnisa B'Mochala, that there are two Lashonos in Rashi to explain this din of Havoshia, and this is not Rashi here in Brachos, but in Menachos. According to Rashi's first Lashon, he says that Tvua B'Mochala is like a machal behema, and if you're presenting in front of you a food that's roi lachil behema, it's not chayv maaser. But in Rashi's second lashon, he says that by taking the grains into the house with that chaff, that's not rias pnei abayis. Rias pnei abayis has to be that the winnowing and the removing of the motes took place before he brought the. Before he brought the tefuah into the house. The Nod Yehudin at Tzlach writes that according to the first Lashon of Rashi, the p'tur here is of Rav Oshia is not because of Rias Pnei Abayis, but rather Rav Oshia is talking about a case, Shalom Mirech HaTefuah Liolam. He has no intention of ever doing winnowing. And therefore the food remains forevermore Michael Behema, according to Rashi's second Lashon, even though he intends to do Meruach afterwards, nevertheless he prevented the Chalos, the emergence of the Chiyuv of Meiser, because the Tfuah did not see the Pnei Abayis after Meruach, but rather before Meruach. Other Achronim write that according to Rashi's first Lashon, the Ptur is because there was no Re'ias Abayis. And the difference between the first Lishna and the second Lishna is that in the case of the first Lishna of Rashi, the Ptura is because at the time of Rias Pnei Abayis, the Tvua was already Ptura, because once he was Mafkiyah from Michael Adam, there's a Chalos Ptura Liolam, and therefore even if he does the Meruach afterwards, it doesn't reverse the Ptura. The second Lishna of Rashi, on the other hand, is the Ptur is because the Tfuah cannot see the Rias Pnei Abayis, and there just simply won't be a Mitzius of Rias Pnei Abayis. Now, there's a Rabbeinu Yonah here in terms of HaKozas Dam Kodshim, and Rabbeinu Yonah says that the Me'ila, in this case, when he takes out the Dam, is Do'oraisa. And the Tam, the reason why it's real Me'ila, is because the Dam has the status of Gufa Behema, and that's why it's subject to Me'ila Min HaTorah. And obviously we're not talking about Me'ila Min Rabbanan, because if that be the case, that's not a Chiddush at all. The Chachamim had a Gzeir of Me'ila in Dam even after Shechita, so how much more so before Shechita? Now why is there Me'ila in Dam HaKaza? And the question here is raised by the Rishonim based on a sugya Me'ila. The Me'ila, Daf Yadav, says, Ein Mol in Bidam. and it sounds like dam is mufka from me'ilah. And the Rishonim answered that that mute only applies to dam li'achar shechita, where that dam is roi la'avodas zrika on the mizbeach, it's roi la'kapara, but konim shechita, where the dam is not roi la'kapara, therefore it's not dam as far as kodshim are concerned. The reason why there's no me'il in dam after shechita, even though the dam is royal kapar, and that's the chiddush, and the Gemara in Me'ilah establishes ein mol in the dam, meaning after shechita, even though the dam is royal kapar, is because the dam itself is not considered miguf hakodshim, and the halach of reach nichoch l'Hashem b'hakrava, which engenders an isur Me'ilah, does not apply to the dam. The dam is not miyuchad; it's not designated as reach nichoch l'Hashem. It is miyucha lekapara, but dam ayotzim in hakodshim is not considered miyucha lereach nichoch Hashem, and therefore there's no me'ila. Now, if he takes the dam out of the kodshim b'chaya behema, then logically we know that there is me'ila, because at that point it is part of the guf habehema, and that's what we saw in the Rabbeinu Yonah, that me'ila in the case of dam kodshim that he took out during the life of the animal is an Iser d'oraisa. Okay, Rabosai, we're going to stop here. Again, it was a short shiur today because we had a bit of a late start, but Amir Tzashem, Bli Neder, we hope tomorrow we'll start exactly on time. Kei Yirotzon.